Good morning, Dr. Imani. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate that you took time out to be with us and speak about this really important topic. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about what you do? We know that you are a resident physician at the Department of Surgery at the Massachusetts General Hospital, but we would definitely like to know a little bit more.
I'm Imani. I'm originally from Northern California. I grew up in the Bay Area. I went to school originally, actually went to Virginia and was at Hampton University for a couple of years, and then graduated from UC Irvine from undergrad. And then went home for a couple of years before med school, and then attended the Charles Drew University UCLA medical education program before making my way back to the East Coast. To be here in Boston for my surgical training. I just completed a master's in public health, with the purpose of doing that was to really dig into the other aspects of medicine, the social determinants of health, being able to do study designs and be able to create interventions that actually really get to the nitty-gritty details of how to actually push change in healthcare delivery and access to underserved populations. In the last year or so, I've kind of taken a dive into Med Twitter, which has been an interesting experience for me. But it's been a very good and
How
rewarding experience.
so? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I mean, in the middle of the pandemic, it's hard to network and build relationships.
Absolutely.
And so Med Twitter became an outlet for a lot of people, and I actually created some very beautiful relationships through it. I see one of my friends on this call actually, where we created a separate community that really helped me actually get through the pandemic and being isolated during my first research year and being remote, which was very hard on my mental health. So I'm very grateful to Med Twitter. I have some amazing friends that I've made through it, surprisingly, and I've made a lot of great connections for work and life and all of that. As you said, we became introduced or we became connected because I spoke up about mental health. As in the one of the tweets I mentioned, I was about 2.5 weeks ago, I ended up in the acute psych facility in our ED at MGH. To backtrack, I have a history of PTSD. That was diagnosed a couple of years ago, which stems somewhat from the murder of one of my brothers. But I also do have a history of anxiety and depression that goes a lot further back. Some of this is related to I'm adopted, and I was adopted at a very young age that was very critical to child development. I love my family. I would obviously say, yes, they should adopt me again. But it did create a little bit of a challenge for me growing up, just because of where it was during my developmental time. I was about 2.5. So there was a lot of attachment and things like that that were really key during that time of life that were a little bit disruptive for me. And then also, my biological mother had a lot of drug issues, and so I was exposed to drugs at a very young age, which is also in the literature been shown to result sometimes in increased rates of anxiety and depression in kids and in adolescents and adults. And so some of this is life that has definitely had an effect on me, and some of this is out of my control. It was more of the environment that I was in as a small child and as an infant. So, but you know. Either way, I'm happy to be here to talk about my journey and help, normalize this conversation for physicians, especially because I think, especially as a surgeon, we are really bad about talking about our mental health, and we use it as a way to we weaponize it against each other, and I think it's really harmful not only to each other but also it's harmful for our patients because. Us being fully able to pour from our cups, we have to really talk about what's bothering us. And, as physicians, we don't do normal things. We have a lot of pressure on us. And so I think it's imperative that we really change the narrative on mental health.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing your history of PTSD and your trauma. I'm sure it's really difficult to talk about it. And I hope we haven't triggered you in some way or like it hasn't brought back. Okay, thank you so much. Yeah. Because I'm sure a lot of people who are listening, and especially non-doctors or those who are not medical practitioners, can also benefit from this knowledge that, hey, you were dealt with, you know, you had to deal with some very difficult circumstances, and yet you managed to pull yourself out of it. Because, you know, as you're telling me all these things, I'm, you know, there's a lot going on in my mind that how did you manage to, you know, how did you manage to concentrate on your career, given the, all these circumstances that you were going through? It must have been extremely difficult, and then end up in one of the top residency programs. You know, it's not an easy feat, and I'm sure you had to go through a lot of, you know, you had to go through, maybe you had a good support system that was important. And if you can talk about that, because there are lots of people out there who may not have that kind of support system, or who might be going through similar situation, but they're afraid to talk about it, you know, because they feel ashamed. There's a lot of shame and stigma which is attached to mental health. And I can relate to some of it myself because I have PTSD issues as well. I have a history of sexual abuse as a child. I went through that. And I know at that point, I didn't even realize it. Much later in life, and I was going through a completely different set of circumstances, it was triggered. And I didn't even realize what was going on. You know, that was the challenging part. And like you, I remember going, while doing my residency, I used to just break down and I just couldn't go into peds oncology for some reason. And like, I had no idea that it was somehow related to my history of trauma, but like, I just couldn't cope. And I think it's so important to just talk about these issues and to take that stigma off that, because I think there are lots of people who are struggling and they don't want to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Or they're ashamed.
Absolutely. I think it's actually funny you bring up shame. My mom is a social worker, so I grew up in an environment that was very supportive, and she would constantly try and ask, and how was I feeling? And she was very attuned to the fact that I probably was going to have some struggles as I got older. She also worked with foster kids aged like, I think 15 to 17 is their, no, sorry, 11 to 17 as they aged out of the system. And so she had a pretty wide breadth of experience to deal, especially with teenagers as they cope. But I was actually very ashamed to talk to my mom about it. I didn't really open up to her about my struggles until about a year ago, just because I felt that like I had such an amazing support system, like, you know, and, you know, even though I was, you know, I'd read the literature and I knew these things were happening, I felt so ashamed that I had failed her in some way. Mm-hmm. Because I'd failed her love and support and all that. And so she was super, of course, my mom is the same. She was super compassionate about it at all. And she was like, no, like, these are things that you go through, whether it be your past or just the things you've been through in life, like, it's okay. And so that getting to that point was a little bit of a struggle. When I was much younger, I played a lot of sports. I played a lot of team sports, but I also played tennis. And so I remember actually my first depressive episode was probably when I was about 12, just in my room crying for no reason, couldn't figure out why. But sports were a big outlet for me all through middle school, high school, and college. It was a way for me to channel my energy elsewhere. And obviously there was days where, you know, you could only play so much tennis, so much basketball and things like that. But it definitely helped me have some area of release that I found very helpful. Like I said, having a support system is very key. My mom, my brothers, my grandmother, people who know me, like my grandmother is like one of my best friends, as I call her. She calls me her soulmate. And so, you know, they were so key in helping me just get through life. Even if I wasn't really talking a lot about it, you know, like my grandma is very attuned to my emotions. And so she would just sit with me when I wasn't feeling well, and she would sit with me, and, you know, and she's religious, so we'd pray and things like that. But having people who know you is key, and who understand you and are willing to embrace that silence. And I've had that like throughout everywhere. One of my best friends is from high school. He's still in my life, and, you know, I just have to tell him like I'm not feeling well, and he'll just call and just talk, you know, tell me things that, like, he'll tell me about his car, or, you know, gossip at work or something. But he understands that. So we have this mutual back and forth, and he can do the same with me. If he's not feeling well, you know, I'll call him or we'll FaceTime and things like that. But I think the biggest thing that really helped me is therapy. I bounced in and out of therapy starting in college, you know, and I think one of the things about that is therapy is such a personal experience. You have to find who's right for you. And so, you know, if, you know, especially in the acute setting, sometimes you just need to talk to somebody. But if you really want a therapeutic relationship, you have to find that person that you really connect with. And so for me, it actually took a while. It wasn't until I got to residency that I found a therapist that I really, really connected with and was able to really start to unpack the different types of trauma I had experienced and my underlying anxiety and depressive episodes, and really be able to explore that in a place of where I could be vulnerable. But I definitely recommend, you know, in therapy, it's having an objective person to sit there and work through this with you and give you that space to be vulnerable, but also know that, like, you can go there and just say anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't carry into your work elsewhere. You know, and so I think that was a life-changing experience for me, to find a therapist that really connected with me. And then the other thing is, you know, I have been more open about taking meds. I grew up, and one of the reasons I started going to therapy because I was trying to avoid being on meds. And, yeah. You know, and I think that there's definitely a stigma associated with taking medications. And one of my best friends is a psychologist in the military. He's like, you know, people take insulin for their diabetes. And, you know, sometimes these medications can help you lift that pack off your back. You know, they become a way to help you stabilize your mood so you can actually process.
Right.
Now I'm currently on Prestique. I think it's for me. I went through a couple different med changes as well based on side effects. But I think it really has been helpful to be able to give me that steadiness to be able to process. And it's been a game changer. And, you know, there's definitely times where I've had to make medication adjustments, and my therapist and I talk about eventually getting off of them once I'm in a better place. Right. But I definitely think one of the things that people, you know, there's this idea that meds mean that you can't do it yourself. And there's this idea in general about mental health that it has to be a strictly just by yourself, and I can tough this out. And there's nothing wrong with needing a little bit of help. You know, just like your pancreas might need a little bit of help with the insulin, you know, these meds can, for all the different ways that they work and for whatever symptoms you have, like you said, can lift that pack off your back a little bit. Yeah. So you can stand up and really start to breathe for the first time. So I think the big three for me, to summarize this diatribe I just gave, will be phenomenal support. Find your people. And if it's not your family, like, find your chosen family, as one of my favorite Twitter people says, your chosen family, which are your friends. Talk to somebody and really make an effort to open up and discuss. But that means taking the time to find someone you can connect with. And if you need meds, don't be afraid to, you know, use that. It's just another tool in your box that can really help you explore and grow.
Right. So coming back to the topic of stigma, do you feel that at any point in your career, especially as a woman of color, did you feel that having these mental health issues and being open about it, and also being a person of color, do you think that hindered you in some way? Or did you feel at any point that you were being maybe discriminated against because of your issues?
I feel like, so as a woman of color, specifically a Black woman, we have this thing about where we're supposed to be superwoman.
Yeah.
And we have to just tough it out.
Yeah.
And I think it's, some of it's generational. It's very much in the Black community. And I know, talking with friends, it's within other minority communities as well. And I think especially at some point, my grandmother and I have actually had some of these debates, and she grew up in a very different time. Mm-hmm. And she had to be Superwoman. And so, and at different points, there's this, like, you know, you have to figure out a way to keep going. But she wasn't able to express herself in many ways. And I think as a Black woman, we are not given the freedom to have the full spectrum of emotions. And so I don't necessarily know.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you a little bit. Could you could you be a little bit more specific about this? Like, what do you mean? Like, you know, so that our audience can also understand.
Absolutely.
You know, they can definitely relate to that also.
Yeah. So what I mean, when we're not given the freedom to have our full spectrum of emotions, in the sense of at work, if something upsets us, we have to be very conscious of how we respond to it, because we don't want to be labeled as angry. You know, if we also on the other end of the spectrum, when we cry, we're hysterical. And I think a lot of women feel that way, but it definitely plays into this idea of the Black woman being a superhero. And we have these superpowers to overcome everything. And we carry all this trauma with us. And, you know, we just were, you know, this is idea. Like, I love the idea of Black girl magic, but I also think to some extent, it dehumanizes us, because we're magical, because we can just take all these hits and keep going. And in some ways, like, that's just, it can be detrimental to our experience. And so I think a lot of minorities and a lot of minority women, we learn to mute our emotions. And it's very harmful for us, you know? And so I can't say for sure I think I've inadvertently been, discriminated against or ostracized, when people will say things like, oh, well, you know, we'll have a stronger person do this. And it's just like, I don't think that's what you were aiming for, but inadvertently just made me feel less than.
Yeah.
You know, and it was an attempt to help, an attempt to offload, but I was kind of like, wrong choice of words. But I think a lot of the stigma is just this fear. And, you know, I don't think I've been overtly discriminated against or stigmatized, but it's this fear that I will be. And that especially in surgery, that I can't keep up, or I can't, you know, I'm gonna be weak and mm-hmm. things like that. And then also within the Black community, you know, we're very hush hush about some of these things. And it's one of those things, it's like, we can't pray this away. We got to talk about it, you know? And it's not to say that, you know, to specifically pick on the Black community or the church. I'm, you know, a devout Christian, and I very much love my church. They're a very big source of support for me as well. But I think overall, sometimes the church is also weaponized against us, you know? And so I think there has to be this idea. We really do have to expand our ability to have hard conversations, our ability to deal with the scarier emotions, our ability to sit in discomfort and vulnerability with one another. But because it definitely has this thing in your head where you're going through all this and you're just so afraid that, like, someone's going to think you're less there and you're not capable. And then it becomes this vicious cycle that adds to the anxiety, it adds to depression, and like, you're like, you built it up in your head. And then one of the beautiful things that happened to me here in residency is one of my co-residents was like, I'm on meds, you know, I have anxiety, I have depression. And for me, like, it like popped that bubble, because, you know, she's one of our beloved residents, and I, like, so many people adore her and come to her for support.
Exactly.
And it gave me that space to also kind of like breathe at work. And, you know, I'm, you know, people know that I'm on meds and I'm in therapy and I'm doing better and I have bad days and I have relapses of my PTSD. But to me, at least, I hope that it's showing that I'm also still a good resident, mm-hmm. that just, you know, and is still able to function. And sometimes I just need to be like, hey, like, no, I need to go home and take care of myself and all these things, and I'm okay. But that means that I might pull back a little bit personally from work, in the sense of like my personal relationship with work, so that I can be there for my patients, because I can't do all of those things. And so for me to be the best doctor, that means that, you know, that I'm going to go home. I got to go to sleep at a certain time. I can't hang out. I don't want to talk. Like, you know, I got to get through my day. And so that means that there's going to be different levels of, you know, social interaction that I'll have. But it also means that, kind of going through this experience a little bit more openly, I'm hoping that my co-residents or people who do talk to me are able to see that you can navigate a very tough surgical residency and still be a full version of yourself and still have the full range of emotions.
Yeah.
I will always be a little bit more muted at work. That's just how you have to be as a Black woman in America. But, you know, I'm more expressive probably now than I was when I first came as an intern.
Right. Absolutely. And I feel that women in general feel that they will be perceived, at least I felt that way, I'd be perceived as less professional if I expressed my views or if I came across as being weak or vulnerable. So I just wanted to like close myself up and like not tell anyone about it and just put on this show that, oh, I can deal with it. But you're right, absolutely. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we normalize these situations, the more women will be able to, you know, feel comfortable. And I think we will practice better as physicians.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think there's the elephant in the room is if you don't take care of your mental health, you will shut down. And that's kind of what happened to me now 2 years ago. You know, it was the first anniversary, it was my brother's first birthday. Yeah. After he had passed, and I just shut down, like just completely became physically ill and had to, you know, remove myself from clinical work for about a week. And that's what landed me in therapy in the first place, is because like I just kept going. And never really unpacked the trauma that came along with that. And I think that's what happens to people when you start seeing these drastic shifts in their personalities, or, you know, when, you know, they even like, you know, they become shells of themselves or whatever. That's what happens when you don't deal with your mental health, is you just shut down, your body shuts down. And I think, like, as we said, it's a disservice to us, it's a disservice to our colleagues, it's a disservice to our patients to not process. And it doesn't have to be something as dramatic as like I went through with losing a sibling. You know, like I said, in surgery, like every time you have a bad outcome, whether it be just a complication or you lose a patient or you see something traumatic in the trauma bay, like that leaves a mark on you. And so if you don't decompress from that at some point, it builds up, and then eventually you explode in some way. And whether that be, you know, crazy partying on the weekends or yelling at family members or, you know, having depressive episodes or, you know, as for lack of better terms, mental breakdowns, like you have to decompress. And I think, you know, it's, The word debrief is just used so often that people are just like, I don't want to talk about it, or reflections or whatever you want to call it. I think you need to work that into your personal life and work life. You know, you need to have these sessions where you talk about things and you kind of, you like release the pressure valve.
Right. Absolutely. So we have only 5 minutes left, and then I think the Zoom call will shut down. But quickly asking, like in your day-to-day life, how do you deal with, if you're having an episode, for instance, and you're in the middle of your surgery, how do you have any tools? How do you pull yourself out of it? Do you leave the surgery, or do you continue, or how do you cope?
So I actually have become very attuned to when I'm not feeling well. And so the luxury of being a resident is I won't scrub if I'm not feeling in a state that I feel safe to practice. When before I landed therapy, I would have like basal vagal and kind of panic attacks, things like that. And I would, you know, take a step back and be like, I think I'm going to faint. At that point, I would, you know, break scrub and go get water and sit down. But, you know, because I've spent so much time working with my therapist and becoming in tune with, you know, my needs and my body and all that, like I said, I won't scrub if I'm not feeling well. And I think, you know, there's different ways people react to stress and whatnot. And obviously there's times where, you know, I could be in a trauma and we have a GSW or gunshot wound victim come in, and that can be triggering for me. But I think the part of our job as doctors, and it becomes very natural, is we compartmentalize. And so, you know, you focus on what you're focusing on, and that's all that you can focus on. And, you get through it. It just becomes a, you know, you take it step by step and you kind of, you know, for lack of better terms, become robotic. But the key to that is afterwards is I have to make sure to talk about it, whether it be with my colleagues, my therapist, or just, you know, I have to sit, meditate, whatever. I have to unpack that. Otherwise it's going to build up again and again. And so I think that's the key is like, you know, either you're not feeling well, tell somebody and break and they either scrub out or don't scrub in the first place. Or if you're able to compartmentalize that, do your job, but then take the time that you need afterwards to decompress and process and talk to somebody.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on our podcast. And we really appreciate it. I'm sure a lot of people will hear this conversation and learn a lot from you. And I'm sure that a lot of people want to reach out to you for more. And we might just get back in touch with you to learn more about how you cope and how you do it. And you're a wonderful doctor. And I'm so happy to see that we have these amazing people who have the ability to overcome their trauma and still continue, and they're ready to talk about it and not feel ashamed or not feel that there's a stigma attached to mental health. And that's why we had this conversation in the first place.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure to chat with you guys. I'm happy to come back. For anybody who got this link off my Twitter or Instagram, you know, feel free to reach out and have discussions. And, you know, I am not a therapist. In no way will I ever say that. But I am someone who, you know, hopefully can at least in some ways give you some comfort in knowing that you're not alone.
Right.
And I'm happy to chat a little bit and encourage you along your path. Otherwise, thanks again for having me. I look forward to working with you in the future.
Great. I will be posting this recording on the YouTube and I'll send you the link and as well and on the Apple podcast. And thank you again, once again, for being here and have a nice day.
You too.